Regular board meeting to order. Today is January 21st. As always, we start with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask the best dressed director, Director Yo, to lead us in the pledge tonight.
I'm ready. Thank you, everyone. This is the flag. We will begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice. Thank you, Father.
Madam Clerk, can you call the roll, please?
Roll call, Director Amezcua. Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Jung. Director Jung. Director Meeks.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Director Sheldon.
I'm here, thank you.
Director Tran.
Here.
Director Wigan.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Jung. Hey, he's supposed to be on mute. You have eight directors present.
Okay. I see Director Jung, but it's a technical difficulty. Okay. That will bring us to the Employee of the Quarter Award to Principal Programmer Anthony Nguyen. Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, Mr. President, I'm going to ask Frank Hernandez, the Director of Information Services, to present Vicki.
President Bilodeau and members of the board, good evening. My name is Frank Hernandez. I'm the Director of the Information Services Department, and I'm very happy here this evening to present an award to a very special person. The employees have voted and selected Vicki Nguyen as the 2025 Employee of the Year.
All right.
Vicki Nguyen, Principal Programmer Analyst, was a 2025 Employee of the Fourth Quarter. Vicki's contributions during the October-December 2025 quarter exemplify the very best of public service leadership. Immediately preceding the current Director of Information Services arrival on September 17, 2025, Vicki was selected to serve as Interim Director of Information Services during a very critical leadership transition. Her performance in that role set the conditions for success throughout the quarter, and the district continues to benefit from the stability, clarity, and operational strength she ensured. Vicki guided the Information Services Department through one of the most challenging periods a team can face, a change in command. She did so quietly, effectively, without seeking recognition or visibility. Yet her impact was unmistakable. She safeguarded team welfare, maintained consistent service delivery to the district, and kept projects on track during a time when momentum could easily have been lost. Because of her leadership, the new Director of Information Services inherited a department that was productive, well-managed, and in excellent health, an outcome that reflects both her capability and her deep care for the organization. Beyond day-to-day operational leadership, Vicki made enduring contributions that demonstrate foresight and discipline. She led the creation of standard operating procedures, documentation to support consistent execution, resilient knowledge transfer, and transparent continuity of leadership. She also produced clear diagrams of enterprise systems, capturing data flows and relationships across platforms and internal customers. These materials have accelerated the new Director of Information Services onboarding, strengthen organizational understanding, and will serve the district into the future. Throughout this transition, Vicki provided honest, steady insight into operations, team dynamics, and district needs. She showed flexibility, sound judgment, and calm authority, fully embracing the department's servant leadership and customer service standards. Much of her most important work was unseen, but it was exactly that work that ensured stability for the team confidence for our internal customers, and a successful leadership handoff. As Vicky approaches her retirement on January 23rd, 2026, this nomination is especially meaningful. She has been phenomenal throughout her career and notably quiet about her accomplishments. This quarter and the transition at Encompass highlight her dedication, integrity, and the kind of leadership that protects the mission and elevates others. For her exceptional interim stewardship, lasting operational improvements, and unwavering commitment to the team and district during a pivotal period, Vicky Nguyen is highly deserving of the Employee of the Year recognition. Congratulations to Vicky.
Just explain one thing. Originally, Vicky was coming here. She was selected Employee of the Year. But a few days ago, she was also selected Employee of the Year. Now she's leaving us on Friday. So normally, we would have brought her back next month for Employee of the Year, but we're doing both tonight, Employee of the Quarter and Employee of the Year.
Well, I just want to say thank you to all the directors. Thank you, Stony Valley District, for giving me the opportunity to serve the privilege to have a long, fulfilling career at the district. And it's such a, I'm truly grateful and honored. So I just want to take opportunity to thank you, your kindness from the staff, from everyone. The support is overwhelming. I'm overwhelmed by the support and just loving it. Thank you.
Yes. Get you over here. You go.
For later. Just Mike, for a week later. Way stronger.
Bye-bye.
That's the way to do it.
Okay, Mr. General Manager, are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Now's the time for visitor participation. If any visitors want to address the board on items in our subject matter or jurisdiction, I see none online and I see none in the chambers. That brings us to the consent calendar, which consists of items 1 through 22. Would anybody like to pull an item? And I see no speaker cards. What is the pleasure of the board?
I'll move the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Madam Clerk, can you call the roll, please?
Roll call. Director Amezcua? Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Jung? Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen? Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Wygant?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 7 yes votes, with Directors Amezcua, Nguyen, and Jung absent.
Great. That brings us to informational items. First one is update on research and development activities.
Did Dr. Megan Plumley give an update on the research department?
All right. Good evening. Let me pull up the slide. All right. Good evening. Tonight I'll give you my kind of usual update where I choose three projects to highlight out of the range of projects we're working on. But just some quick background first.
Click first. Mouse click.
Okay. That works better. All right, so we issue a summary report a couple of times a year. So we just did the most recent one in October. So we try to keep the summaries short, like half a page to a page for all of the projects and programs we're working on where we are in a lead role or doing significant part of the work. We have even more projects where we are supporting and hosting research led by others that are listed more briefly at the end. So this report is attached to the staff report for today. So we currently have 28 different programs and projects, or the programs or the sustained continuous efforts, like for example, testing RO membranes to trial the best performing ones for possible use in the plant, the risk plant, and then projects that are more like 1 to 3 year long studies. So just a quick reminder about our main four programs. So these are the membrane testing programs like ultrafiltration membranes, and then the reverse osmosis membranes. So when new products come out into the market, become commercially available or will be soon, we can trial them at pilot scale or at full scale, depending to see how well they perform and if they measure up to the products we're already using. And then we also trial new types of anti-scalants, since that's a really important chemical we use in the facility. And then the newest program, but now running for several years, is our PFAS media testing program, where we take different types of ion exchange or granular activated carbon products or novel adsorbents that can remove PFAS from our groundwater, drinking water supply, and trial these products against one another and see what may be considered for procurement for the producer PFAS facilities. And then as far as our various projects, we always have many of these going. So of course, I won't go through all of this, but chose three today to zoom in on a little bit more. But I like this slide because it shows you kind of these different themes across different groups of projects, ranging from PFAS, both treatment of PFAS and measurement of PFAS, to digitalization topics, including AI-related topics, membrane performance and optimization in our potable reuse facility, our groundwater recharge operations, and then water quality and regulatory compliance related, like complying with virus removal requirements in the potable reuse system. So for today's presentation, I want to touch on three projects just briefly. Just an announcement about a new grant we have to study methods for modernizing our microbial monitoring program for GWRS. I want to share with you the PFAS treatment facilities data dashboard that we constructed in collaboration with Vicky, our employee of the year, which was shared in our recent OCWD webinar in December. And then the a new project that has some preliminary findings I'd like to share. That's a startup company that has a technology that can destroy PFAS using a vacuum-based UV light. All right, so just one slide on this new grant from the USBR. Our R&D team on the upper right there is Julio Polanco and Andrew Huang from our R&D group. Julio's our molecular biologist, and Andrew is our senior laboratory analyst and data scientist, helping Julio with all the massive amounts of DNA sequencing data coming out of that will come out of this project. So this is a competitive research grant program where Julio submitted this proposal to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. They ask for, if you get to the next round, virtual meeting presentation to the USBR panel, and then they select a subset of the proposing teams to win the award. So we got a $200,000 grant. We're leading and doing the bulk of the field and lab work for this project, but we also have on our team Virginia Tech and University of Notre Dame, because there are professors from each of those universities with expertise in this topic. So they'll be advising us on the study plan and interpreting results. And basically, the goal is to evaluate certain new techniques for measuring microbial water quality that are being used in other fields, like in medicine, to profile the removal of microbial populations through the advanced purification process with techniques like environmental DNA sequencing, which just refers to the soup and mixture of DNA that may be present in our source water, which is the treated wastewater from OC San, and how that gets removed through treatment. And then more targeted techniques that zero in on, for example, certain viruses using droplet digital PCR, which is like an update to the qPCR method. So the thinking here is that, you know, for many years we've relied as an industry on more conventional microbial targets like E. coli and total coliform. And those are still really important and have like a regulatory precedent and are required to be monitored. But there could be additional information from recognizing that those are not the only indicators present, and there are a lot of other potential species like not well, species like shown on the graph there are some examples. So pepper mild model virus, a plant virus that infects peppers, and then crass phage is a virus that infects bacteria. And what this data shows, to give you an example of the type of data we expect to see in our study, this is from some preliminary work that Julio has done. The blue and the orange color are the feed water going into GWS, so the secondary effluent, and then when we add chlorine to that water to form chloramines, the microfiltration feed. So you can see pretty low gene counts. It's just a few gene copies per liter on a log scale here, and then it's removed to non-detect just through the microfiltration process for these bacteria. Or sorry, viruses, based on the detection limit, which is a relatively high one in this case, but with the advanced methods we'll use, that sensitivity will improve. So more to come later on once this study really kicks off. All right, I wanted to share with you our PFAS facilities dashboard. Again, we presented this recently in the December webinar, where the engineering department, Ryan Booley, gave an overview of the PFAS treatment program and facilities, and then Andrew from R&D talked about our dashboard. So, of course, with so many different facilities in operation now and more to come, it's generating a lot of data. So managing such large volumes of data can be harder and harder. So the idea here was to build a dashboard to make this data more accessible, to really help with staff's, you know, workflows and efficiency, because otherwise you're more manually trying to analyze this data. So just to give some background on where this data is coming from, so these treatment facilities have either ion exchange or granular activated carbon media, and our water quality department collects samples from all these facilities and our laboratory staff analyze them. These are permit required samples that are collected to monitor the treatment performance, so influent compared to effluent. So the water goes through two treatment vessels in a lead lag configuration. So first through the lead vessel, and where much of the PFAS is removed, and then through the lag vessel where it's polished down to non-detect values for the regulated PFAS compounds. And there's as many of these pairs as needed to achieve the capacity necessary for that particular site's flow rate. And the lead vessel is really important because that serves as the indicator for when it may be time to replace the media, since over time it loses its ability to remove PFAS as it becomes exhausted, and then we replace it with fresh media. So there's 27 facilities operational now and 68 expected at the final build-out. So it's a lot of treatment facilities, a lot of samples, monthly samples and quarterly samples, depending on the site and the point along the treatment train. And each of these samples generates data for 25 different PFAS compounds. Even if it's a non-detect value, which it often is, especially after treatment, that's still a data point that has to be managed and analyzed. So this actually adds up with our current 27 treatment plants to about 100,000 individual PFAS data points annually. So it should double with completion of more facilities. So our R&D team, together with Information Services, built this tool in-house using free open source tools like RShiny and deployed it on our internal servers. So the data gets pulled automatically from the existing database that has all that laboratory data. So normally staff would have had to export that data, like to Excel, generate a plot, maybe email it to a coworker, go back and update your old plots from before with the new date. So you can imagine how tedious and kind of repetitive that is across different staff. So now instead they can log in on a simple web browser and all the plots and all the treatment facilities are there. So there's high-level overviews, and also they can drill down deeper if they need to. So the idea is to really improve access at all levels of the organization. Here's just a quick visual of what it looks like. On this version, the city name and the well names have been anonymized since this was presented in our webinar, but the map view shows different sites and different status of PFAS breakthrough for different plants or vessels and facilities. And then the graph along the bottom is the treated water from one of the sites. So it's a pretty boring graph just showing non-detect values for the different regulated PFAS, but that's what we want to see. So that's kind of where we're at with this dashboard. It's been pretty useful. We're continuing to get feedback from staff because once you start using something like this, you get ideas about what else could be added, you know, especially things that need to be reported or plotted could be already on the dashboard. But in the future, we'd like to integrate other water quality data beyond PFAS to make this useful in other ways and consider incorporating some predictive analytics like shown on the chart there, taking the breakthrough data, PFAS concentration on the y-axis there, and x-axis is either plotted as time or amount of water that's been treated, and over time, as the lead vessel becomes exhausted, you see that PFAS go up. So making projections like that, which help our engineering team advise the producers on when it's time to purchase media and replace it. And then also evaluating options for the producers themselves to be able to access the dashboard and view their facilities. All right, and so finally, sticking with the PFAS theme, I want to share some interesting data coming out of a company we've been working with that has a new method for destroying PFAS. PFAS destruction is kind of a hot topic. If you go to conferences and other PFAS meetings, the ion exchange and GAC that we use is really a separation technique. It's absorbing the PFAS, but it's not destroying it. And then we dispose of that media and put fresh media in. But there's a lot of talk and interest in destroying that PFAS. It's rare to see a technology that is able to do so in really a flow-through kind of mode, but that's what this company's been testing. So the company name is Water Illumination. They're out of UC Riverside. So the founder and co-founder are Zhujun Yu and Haizhou Lu. And Haizhou we've worked with for a long time. He's a professor at UC Riverside who's an expert in UV. So we've worked with him on our GWRS UV AOP system previously and studies related to that. So he's taken that UV knowledge and applied it towards PFAS and came up with this approach. They also have an advisor from Trojan Technologies, which is the world's largest UV company, and Trojan is also the manufacturer of the UV AOP system that we use in GWRS. And then our R&D study team includes Sophie and Mita from our field headquarters office. So they're acting as the hosts and liaisons to facilitate having this team come in, set up their equipment, take their samples, do all that safely, generate their data. So they really wanted to study the a drinking water application. So we offered them access to our groundwater well shown on the map there at Warner Basin. So this is our groundwater that has PFAS. And they're treating it with their pilot scale system and demonstrating destruction of the PFAS. So this was previously the site of our media pilot where we trialed different ion exchange and GAC products. And that, as you may recall, has been moved to the Yorba Linda Water District PFAS treatment plant. So the timing ended up working out really nicely because we have this pilot sort of test bed that was now vacant and they needed a host site. So they've been busily collecting lots of samples and analyzing them at UC Riverside for PFAS. Just a quick overview, like what is this actual technology, right? Vacuum UV. So as far as the light spectrum, as it goes towards the left from visible light down to lower and lower wavelengths like UV light, it gets more, the wavelengths get shorter, which means it's more high energy light. And vacuum UV is the highest energy below the UV spectrum. So it's between 100 to 200 nanometers. And the vacuum part just refers to the bulb or the lamp, not the treatment system. It's not all under a vacuum, but just the lamps. Can't have any air in there. It'll absorb the UV light. So the other part of the non-confidential part of their secret sauce has to do with, in addition to the vacuum UV light, they add a certain gas that they call a tuning gas, and the pH has to be adjusted to a higher pH, so an alkaline pH. So with that recipe, they're able, and they have, oh, I forgot to mention, they have various grants and funding sources that's supporting the work. So with that recipe, they are able to, oh, sorry, keep forgetting where I'm going next. First, I wanted to show you the pilot. I'm so excited about the data, I can't want to get to that part. Here's a picture of the pilot, two different views. You can see with the blue arrow on the left side there is where the water comes in and the gas gets added through a sparging step there, and then it flows just through the UV lamp. So pretty simple as far as what's involved here. Okay, so the preliminary findings are showing PFAS destruction, so that's pretty exciting. You really don't see data like this in the industry as far as just flowing water, that the kinetics are fast enough to destroy the PFAS so that as quickly as the water flows in, the PFAS is destroyed and the water comes out PFAS-free. Typically, destruction techniques you'll see maybe has to be circulated in a reactor for like 24 hours or something like that with different types of high energy techniques. Here on the charts, we have PFOA and PFOS on the y-axis and time several days on the x-axis. And the influent water coming in is the red, so that's the PFAS that was present in this water, and then the blue and the yellow are the treated water coming out, which is either at non-detect, they are sometimes plotting the detection limit, or G-values below that number. And so it's all come, and then over time, they trial different like amounts of time and different types of tuning gases. So seeing really effective PFAS removal there, which is pretty exciting. Of course, it's research. We have more to go. Actually, at full scale, a technology like this would need much faster destruction. Here it's taking a few minutes, but really it needs to happen in a few seconds to enable a more reasonable footprint for scale up. And so more work is needed. They do have some ideas there. And they do plan to construct now a second generation pilot with more powerful lamps that would be more similar to what a full scale system would look like. And they do expect to see destruction really rapidly under those conditions. They are struggling a little bit with certain types of PFAS that I don't plot here, like some of the shorter chain sulfonate compounds, which are typically more challenging for a lot of different techniques. So they want to optimize that as well to get more of the broad spectrum PFAS destruction. But yeah, just a nice example of cases where we're not necessarily leading the work and doing all of the sampling ourselves or generating the ideas, but play a really important role in the industry and our community to act as a test bed, because universities and startup companies need access to the real water supply and the perspective from rural utilities on what matters and our thoughts on where to go next with it. So with that, if there's time, I can take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Plumley. Are there any questions?
How did you get the Virginia Tech and Notre Dame partnership?
Dr. Amy Pruden from Virginia Tech is a pretty famous microbiologist. So we've known of her for a long time, and I've met her a few times at conferences and on committees and things like that. So we asked her if she was interested in this topic, and she was, so she agreed to commit to the proposal. And then Dr. Kyle Bibby from Notre Dame, we met more recently at a conference and found we have some overlap in our research interest areas. So so their work is really relevant to what we're doing. So looking forward to their feedback.
So that adds the value to going to the conferences, something like, oh, you're just going to get a free trip, but you're actually finding value. Attending and connecting.
Great.
I think that's good. My wife goes to a lot of conferences, and I wonder what the heck she's doing. I'm stuck with kids at home, but you know, proved the case right there. Yeah.
Excellent. Mr. Yeo.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Megan. Can you go back to the, the previous slide? Yeah, this is I'm interested in understanding a little bit more about this. Is it actually destroying the compound, or is just breaking it so that it's not detectable? And the compound, is it still like a carcinogen, or is it still damaging to human body?
Really important question. Yeah, with destruction projects like this, you do want to show that something like, you know, the 8-chain PFOS isn't just becoming like the 7-chain compound. The analytical techniques do measure a lot of those other compounds, so they're able to show that it's not just turning into those shorter PFAS. It can at first, it sort of can unzip it, you know, break it down. But even trifluoroacetic acid, like one of the really small types of PFAS, it's able to destroy with this technique. So that is an active area of research for them, but preliminarily it does look like it's not just turning it into other types of PFAS, but more mineralizing it away. And the light actually doesn't interact directly with the PFAS to break it. It's a pretty complicated like series of chemistry steps where the light reacts with the water in the presence of that tuning gas at the right pH condition to form radicals and hydrated electrons. And then they're reacting with the PFAS and breaking them down. Fast.
Thank you. Chemistry was one of my favorite subjects.
So could this potentially take the place of the wellhead treatment systems that were Mr. Olson's currently building?
Theory, if all continues to go well, but we're probably in the classical peak of inflated expectations, and that, you know, with like new technologies that come out and then more work has to be done. But in theory, that is the market they've chosen to pursue. So I think a lot of other destruction technologies are more focused on things like landfill leachate and other more challenging, like AFFF, you know, stockpiles, more concentrated forms of PFAS, because it can be really hard to tackle the low concentrations of PFAS that are already trace concentrations. But this company has chosen to target the drinking water market. So they do want to be chosen instead of GAC and ion exchange. They recognize a lot of those facilities have already been built, but in certain communities where new PFAS treatment plants are needed, maybe in the future they'll have the option to build something like this if this company is able to generate rapid enough destruction with their next generation pilot, which they're building now and asking if they can bring it to the Bessie site and keep going with the more powerful lamps that they think should be able to destroy the PFAS in seconds rather than minutes.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you for your presentation. Okay, that brings us to our next item, which is the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority update. We had an exciting meeting last Tuesday, yesterday. But I should announce that tomorrow, SAPA is celebrating its 50th anniversary. And there's a reception at Cressmore Manor in Jurupa Valley from 6 to 9 p.m. And we have tickets. If you'd like to join us in Jurupa Valley tomorrow night, I will be there. I doubt my spouse will go with me, but I will be there. And so if anybody else would like to go, please inquire. You're welcome to come. That brings us to item 25, which is the water resources summary.
Yeah, Mr. President, that report is contained in the packet.
Okay. That brings us to conference and committee reports. The Communications Committee Chair Tran. And there he is.
Report's in, contained in the package.
Very good, sir. The GDBRS Steering Committee Chair Green.
Report is contained in the agenda, as is water issues.
Great. And then Administration and Finance, Chair Yeo.
The report is contained in tonight's packet.
Great. Are there any reports on committees, conferences, meetings attended at district expense that anybody would like to report on? Hearing none. Verbal reports, President's report. I don't really have much to report tonight. The general manager's report.
Just one item I wanted to mention. I think it was yesterday we found out our two PFAS federal earmark requests have made it through the federal budget process. And we expect the president to sign that by next Tuesday at the latest. So one request was with Congresswoman Young Kim. The other was with Congressman Luke Correa through the city of Santa Ana. Combined, both requests will bring us just under $2 million But we were happy to hear that.
Fantastic news. Bernie, yeah, director's reports. Okay, how about the general counsel report?
I have a closed session to announce. We have a conference with labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6, with OCW's designated representative being Ms. Natasha Isaac, and the employee organization, the Orange County Employee Association. And with that, Mr. President, I recommend recess to closed session.
The board will recess to closed session.
All right, we've returned from closed session pursuant to the conference of labor negotiators as listed on the agenda, and there are no reportable items from the closed session.
Right, then the meeting is adjourned.